Cardinal News, we believe facts matter, and so does your support. As an independent, nonprofit newsroom, we're committed to bringing you in-depth, fact-based reporting about Southwest and Southside Virginia. It's the kind of reporting you won't find anywhere else. If our stories have informed, inspired, or even surprised you this year, consider supporting our work. Every contribution helps keep this kind of local news strong. You can give today at cardinalnews.org/membership. Hello and welcome to the Cardinal News of Virginia, a podcast from Cardinal News. We're a nonprofit independent newsroom serving Southwest and Southside Virginia at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan, filling in for Dutchie Jesse. The Cardinal podcast is sponsored by Muneris, serving communities with expert group benefits and Medicare solutions. Today, we're joined by healthcare reporter Emily Schaubacher. Emily recently wrote an article about a hospital in Farmville ending its obstetrics and gynecology department. It's the latest in a series of cuts to services for pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum care in some rural parts of Virginia. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this article you wrote about Centra Southside Community Hospital in Farmville. It's something where, you know, Farmville is on the very outer edges of our coverage area, but there are effects here for people who are having babies in a large part of our coverage area. So why did this hospital announce that it's closing its OBGYN department?
Yes. So there are a lot of financial pressures that especially rural hospitals are looking at right now. And there are also longstanding financial pressures, right, that have existed, you know, even before the COVID-19 pandemic, but the pandemic really put a lot of pressure on many hospitals. Leadership at the hospital, I talked to Sloan Albert. She's the senior vice president for Centra Medical Group and their service lines. And, you know, she really cited the challenges in trying to hire providers. Any sort of reliance on traveling healthcare workers can really puts a lot of financial pressure on these rural institutions. They really cited an inability to hire for the job and also just the low number of births in the community. The hospital frequently cites declining birth rates in rural areas as a reason to have to close certain departments. When they had a provider submit their letter of resignation, you know, one of their permanent providers, that was just kind of it for them. They decided to close the department.
I saw in your article that this hospital had about 275 births in a year, and I was doing the math on that. I was like, how frequently is a new baby coming? Mm-hmm. And it's like once every day and a third or something. And so for me, that still seems like a lot of babies. But when you talk about staffing an obstetrics unit to be ready for childbirth or around the clock, it's more than just having like one person around to be ready for that.
Right, right. And, you know, it also comes down to how we bill for labor and delivery, prenatal care, and all the way through labor and delivery, and then a postnatal appointment. All of that is bundled billing, and so it makes it really difficult to afford that level of staffing for a department that has to be open 24/7.
Mm. Yeah, because babies not really on a schedule,
right?
You can't say you're giving birth at 8 o'clock on Monday unless you're inducing or doing a C-section, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right.
Babies, no schedules. I know this isn't the first time that you have covered declining availability of prepartum and postpartum care in our coverage area. You note in this article that since 2018, 5 rural labor and delivery rooms have closed across the state. Only 8 of the state's 28 rural hospitals offer obstetrics care. As of December 19th, that'll be down to 7 because of this central location in Farmville. Last year, you wrote about the hospital in Martinsville closing its labor and delivery unit. And meanwhile, like, we've seen major expansions taking place at some hospitals in our area for other departments. So tell me a little bit more about that, you know, that bundled billing that you mentioned for pregnancy and childbirth, and how that financial scheme isn't really adding up when you're thinking about this kind of department versus maybe expanding emergency services.
Yeah. So Billing for infant maternal health has been a longstanding challenge. And it comes down to kind of just the economics of these different programs. You know, the Centra in Farmville is also expanding its emergency department at the same time that it's closing its, you know, gynecology care. I mean, it goes beyond just labor and delivery services. It's all women's health services as well. Because there's just a better return on investment for emergency department care that gets reimbursed at a higher rate. There's a, you know, greater variety of conditions and treatments that the hospital can bill for. And like women's healthcare has been underfunded for a very long time. But when it comes to, you know, prenatal care, you have your, you know, 9 months of prenatal care. Towards the end of that time, you're going into the doctor about once a week. Some people are going in more than that if they have complications. And then you have your birth, which may include a C-section, you know, or anything, any sort of complication, and then that one appointment afterwards. So that's all, and then the hospital only gets paid for all of that at the very end. And it's also capped at about just like a little over $2,000. I think it's $2,300 is pretty much the maximum that a hospital can bill. So it's just not very much money for a very long amount of time. You know, that's like 9-10 months. And so it just it's just not a very efficient way to look at infant and maternal health care. And it makes it really costly to continue these programs. So any time that a hospital is under additional financial stress, it's very common to see women's health and obstetrics and gynecology go away first. Those things get centralized in larger hospitals.
I think the $2,300 that you're saying was the max the hospital could bill. I think that is the max that they could get reimbursed for.
Oh, yes.
For Medicaid, is that
yes,
correct? So that sort of gives you an idea of how a hospital might be reimbursed for that compared to if I sprain my ankle and I go in and I get x-rays and I get a boot and a crutch. I'm going based off real experience here. And they send me out that same day, they're probably going to bill for more than that based on just that one day visit, right? So Centra Southside Community Hospital had made an effort in recent years to try to make it more financially sustainable to offer OBGYN care. Can you tell me about some of the changes that they made in their staffing and their model to try to make this more sustainable and keep this?
You know, in 2021, hospitals everywhere were struggling to staff. There was, you know, record number of people leaving the healthcare field. So Katie Page she's a certified nurse midwife. She's also a provider at the Centra Southside Community Hospital in Farmville. But she's also like the, she works with the Virginia affiliate of American College of Nursing Midwives. So she's done a lot of advocacy work around, you know, maintaining these services for women. And she was very involved in helping the Farmville location develop this model of care that would be more affordable, where they relied on clinicians who have a lower level of training than like a specialized physician or doctor. And so they, you know, they employed several certified nurse midwives. They employ several nurse practitioners as well as physicians assistants to kind of help bridge that gap. You know, you can hire those people and have them work for you at a lower rate than you can a doctor. So they really kind of created the structure where they had a supervising physician, maybe looking in on complex cases. But, you know, certified nurse midwives are able to deliver non-complex births without direct supervision from a physician. If it's a complicated birth, then they have to have a doctor there. But otherwise, they can kind of do it on their own.
So they were trying to lower their reliance on physicians or physicians with specialized expertise, but at the same time, you still need a doctor, like an MD, to be supervising these events in this wing of a hospital.
Right.
And it sounds like when they had that one person resign, it took them down to a point where it wasn't sustainable to have all the shifts covered, like all the hours of the day covered by someone who could be called in to help with one of those complicated births, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, they also have some traveling healthcare employees or workers at the Central Farmville location, which is just, you know, a huge strain on finances. And I think the prospect of having to fill that gap again by another traveling healthcare worker was just not possible.
Right, right. Yeah, if you have the cost of traveling healthcare workers in your facility, and then also if you're thinking about relationship building with your patients who are getting this care, you talked to a couple of people who are affected by the closure who are due in the coming months. Tell us about the people that you spoke to who are really feeling the impact of this.
Yeah, so I spoke with one woman, Candace Doughton, and she lives in Farmville. She is, you know, 8 months pregnant. Right now, she lives about 3 minutes away from the hospital. So it's been a real comfort to her, especially since she's had some complications that are a little bit unexplainable. She's had some unusual cervical bleeding that has kind of gotten worse as her pregnancy has advanced. And, you know, her providers they're not entirely sure why she's having this increased cervical bleeding, but they've kept a very close eye on her and her baby, and everything seems to be going well. But there have been times when she has had, you know, a lot of bleeding, and she's been able to just, like, run over, you know, she's been over into the emergency department in the middle of the night to kind of have her baby checked on because she's really concerned. And so her due date is is 10 days after the December 19th closure of the obstetrics department. Excuse me. And so she's very nervous. The thought of having to drive an hour to go, give birth in Lynchburg, first of all, that's like very stress inducing when you may have a complex pregnancy. And then to follow that up, you know, she would have a care team in Lynchburg that she doesn't know, that she's not familiar with, and they don't know anything about her condition besides what they read in the chart. But they might not know anything about her birth plan or her birth preferences. It just adds a lot of stress, you know, to her pregnancy. And she was hoping for the best and she acknowledged that this was a terrible solution, but hoping that her baby would come a little bit earlier, just so that she could be in the place where she was comfortable and with the people she was comfortable with, where she felt safe to give birth.
So she already had one of those complex pregnancies we were talking about where she needed, you know, an increased level of care throughout her pregnancy. And now she's facing potentially an hour in the car to get to the hospital to give birth. The patients at the Farmville Hospital are going to have their care transferred to Central Virginia Baptist Hospital in Lynchburg. But as of the time of this article coming out, this was earlier in November, Candace hadn't been notified yet by the hospital. So she found out about this from an announcement on Facebook, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. That's how several people found out about this. Centra posted their press release on the hospital's Facebook page. And, you know, I found Candace because I saw that she had shared the press release and, you know, made a comment like, what am I supposed to do? My birth date is 10 days after this, or my due date. And, you know, by the time that I had talked to her later that week, she still hadn't heard from Centra. And I understand that it's probably complicated weighing when you're going to announce to the public and when you're going to tell your patients. Mm-hmm. But it did cause her quite a bit of distress. You know, she was like, well, I do have a prenatal appointment on Tuesday, so I guess I'll just ask my questions then.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was like, I'm trying just to not think about it because it's too stressful and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I'll figure it out as it comes, you know?
Yeah. The number you have in your article is about 100 patients who would need to have their care transfer discussed. Tell me a little bit more about connecting with these two expectant mothers that you interviewed. You had Candace Doughton and Brianna Eubank. And, you know, it's interesting that you found them through Facebook. I think it's like you have this picture in your head, or at least maybe I did, of you like hanging around the front doors of a hospital waiting to ask people who look pregnant, like, hey, can I talk to you about what's happening here? But, you know, in the age of social media and also with us covering large areas geographically, mm-hmm. tell me about how Facebook came into play with connecting with these women.
Yeah. Well, the press release on the Centra Southside Community Hospital, their Facebook page, it was shared over 700 times. I mean, people are really tuned in to what's going on at this hospital in their community. It had, you know, over 100 comments. And, you know, it can seem a little bit grueling, but I just went through all of the public shares of that post and messaged each one individually. You know, I kind of looked at the context of their comment that accompanied the share, and to see if they were an expectant mother, if they had had children at the hospital. Brianna Eubank had her youngest daughter at the hospital just 5 months prior. And I just kind of went through and messaged everybody individually. And I try to acknowledge when someone actually responds, that I understand that it's like kind of weird when a random stranger reaches out to you on social media to talk to you about something deeply personal. But it always surprises me how open like people are to talking about these things. And, you know, Candace was very willing to get on a call with me and tell me all about her complex pregnancy and her worries and the stress she's experiencing. So
yeah, to talk in depth like that about your pregnancy, I'm sure is very, you know, it takes a lot of guts to be able to do that and to put that out there in public.
Yeah. And when I talked to Brianna Eubank, she, you know, like I mentioned, had her baby 5 months prior. And, you know, she was hoping to have at least one more kiddo. You know, she and her husband want a big family. She lives about 30 minutes from Farmville, but now with the closure of the obstetrics unit, it's going to be at least an hour to any other obstetrics unit. And she's like, we're a low income family. Like, gas money is not necessarily on, you know, just on the table for us. We don't just have that gas money laying around. So, you know, potentially having to drive more than an hour for every prenatal appointment, it might not be feasible for her. And that's hard to, you know, stomach when you've lived in this community your whole life. So
yeah, when you have to think about, you know, you have a growing family and where the money is going to go and how you're going to allocate things, it's the practicality of it sometimes when a situation like this takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that they were so willing to talk to you. I've definitely been on the end of, you know, seeing something on Facebook and just messaging people and just like copying and pasting the same, like, hi, my name is Lisa Rowan. I cover education at Cardinal News. And just, I know this is weird, but,
yeah.
And then, you know, I find that either people never see the message because mm-hmm. of their settings and like, we're not friends, so it never goes through to them. Or they're like, yeah, sure, I'll talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's amazing how mm-hmm. willing people are to chat sometimes, but finding the people who actually see your message and get back to you, like that's the most nerve-wracking part, I feel like, when I'm looking for people to talk to.
Yep. I mean, I probably messaged like at least 15 people and then I called it good just to see who would respond. And I got a couple of responses from people who wouldn't be like available to talk to me by my mm-hmm. deadline. But, you know, really, it's like came down to I actually communicated with probably four people.
Yeah. And so. I'm thinking about who fits into the story, who has the time, you know, mm-hmm. who feels comfortable using their name and their situation. And
right.
Yeah. So y'all, if you're active on Facebook, check your spam inbox because mm-hmm. it might be us. Tell me a little bit about the federal situation. So, like, this situation in Farmville is sort of an example of financial pressure on healthcare due in part to the federal spending bill. We were talking about how, you know, women's health has often gotten, you know, lower payments from insurance companies and that sort of thing. But what's the effect of the new spending bill, commonly known as the One Big Beautiful Bill? How is this impacting hospitals?
Okay, that's a very complex question.
Yeah, I heard that heavy sigh because you're like, how do I break this down into like a really easy to digest answer?
Yeah. So it's multifaceted, first of all. you know, one very large aspect of this is that hospitals in Virginia will no longer be able to, or the state will no longer be able to collect provider taxes. So those provider taxes were, you know, implemented from the state onto hospitals. And all that money was put into the Medicaid fund so that the state could draw down more money from the federal government. Mm-hmm. All that money would then go back to hospitals because, you know, then they were able to adjust the reimbursement rate for services. So, you know, Virginia's really taken advantage of that. You know, it's been really helpful to hospitals in the state, especially rural hospitals. Because, you know, all that money comes back to them with a little extra for reimbursements. But now with the One Big Beautiful Bill, states will be capped at taxing at 3%. Right now, Virginia taxes, or in the past, Virginia has taxed at 6%. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, quite a difference. That money won't be coming back towards our rural hospitals anymore. Also, there's an expectation that there will be a lot more people who don't have health insurance with the changes to Medicaid, such as, you know, work requirements. Just the prospect of having to re-enroll every 6 months is most likely going to cause people to fall off. Mm. Also, you know, like with the Affordable Care Act tax credits, the enhanced premium tax credits, those subsidies were put in place during the COVID-19 pandemic and then extended several times to kind of help people with the affordability of this marketplace health insurance. The enhanced subsidies are now going away. And without those enhanced premium tax credits, we're seeing that people's monthly costs for marketplace insurance is more than they can afford. The expectation is that young people, you know, in their 20s who are generally healthy, they don't have any severe, you know, health concerns, and most likely people who don't have children, will just fall off. They won't, they'll opt to go without health insurance. So that means they're not getting their preventative care. They're not getting primary care. Their conditions are going to become chronic, and then they'll go to the emergency department. And that is like really expensive care. And if they can't pay for it, then the hospital either has to pay for it or they lose that money, you know? So it's just, there's going to be so much more uncompensated care in our health systems. And so hospitals are looking at their finances and planning for several, you know, hospitals plan their finances several years in advance. Mm-hmm. And so they're taking a look right now and they're saying, okay, well, there's all of these different things that we're going to be faced with. We need to think about cutting back.
So people are dealing with higher insurance costs and the potential of not having insurance because of the cost. And healthcare providers are facing, you know, lower rates of what they're going to get reimbursed for the people at the lowest incomes who have benefits to help pay their healthcare costs. And so it sounds like the perfect storm for really difficult times for looking at those hospital finances. As you said, it's sort of the whole equation is thrown off about how to pay for this care that people need at some point, whether it's earlier or later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Emily, we will definitely be checking in on this as time goes by because you have been on top of all of these changes to healthcare and how healthcare gets paid for. How can readers reach you?
You can reach me at my email, emily@cardinalnews.org.
Excellent. Thanks for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to the Cardinal News of Virginia. Thanks to our sponsor, Muneris, to Sean Eddy of Eddy Alexander for production support, and to Cardinal News' Zach Shelton. Read all of our paywall-free local news coverage at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan. Take care now.